When the King entourage turned up the long road that led to the main house, they were greeted with a large sign.
Los Pasanas de Santa Gertrudas. Ranch de la Bienvenida al Captain King de Casa.
What's that sign say?
It's the people of the ranch welcoming Captain King home.
Really? You could read Mexican?
It's Spanish, not Mexican.
As the coach pulled up in front of the house, Sally stepped out and looked over to see Smoke, Captain King, and Kleberg engaged in serious conversation with someone. The expressions on their face were not happy.
I wonder what happened while we were gone. Ramon looks very worried.
Sally was glad to see that her intuition wasn't wrong. Something had happened. Even Alice had noticed it.
It's Juan Arino and the others we sent down to Vetadero Meadows. They are dead.
How many are dead?
Everyone we sent down there.
Numbers, man. I want numbers.
Four.
That means a total of 12. 12 good men killed just because Brandt has some personal score to settle with me. Damn it. Why the hell won't he come out and face me in person?
Were the men decapitated?
No, senor.
Did they take any cattle?
Si, senor. They took all the cattle in the Vetadero Meadows. About 300 head.
Richard, are you sure this was Brandt? No beheadings, and they took cattle. This is different from the last time.
It is him. I don't care whether he's doing things differently or not. I know, as sure as I'm standing here, that it was either Jack Brandt or someone who's working for Jack Brandt.
Nearly 10 miles away from the main house, Ted Abbott, Roy Carter, Emil Barrett, and Bobby Spitz were on horseback, moving alongside a meandering creek. They'd been out for 4 days, taking a tally of the cattle that weren't with the main herd. One of the problems with Santa Gertrudis was that the ranch was so large and there were so many head of cattle that it was easy to lose count of how many head there actually were. It was nearly a full-time job for cowboys to ride around the perimeter of the ranch locating the maverick herds.
Whoa! Stop here.
What for?
I gotta water the lilies.
The three other remained in their saddles while Carter went about his business.
What are you laughing at?
I just peed me a grasshopper off that branch there. You should have seen him. He's hanging on for dear life, but I peed him right off.
You must be very proud.
Hey, Captain King's supposed to get back today, ain't he?
Yeah, I think so.
He ain't gonna like it when he hears about Juan and them others.
The four rode in relative silence for about another mile. Then Carter saw three riders pushing about 20 head of cattle. He pointed them out to the others.
Look down there. Them ain't Santa Gertrudis riders, are they?
Ain't none that I know.
Maybe we ought to go down there and see what's going on.
I don't know. I mean, if they are rustling cattle, it might not be a good idea to just ride in on them.
Come on, there are three of them. There are four of us.
Ted's right. Let's go down there and see what's going on.
The four rode toward the three men who were pushing the cattle. Because the three riders were paying attention to the cows, and because of the sound of their horses' hoofbeats, they didn't hear anyone coming up on them. As the four cowboys approached a rather dense thicket, Carter indicated they should go to the left as the cattle passed by him on the right. That gave him the opportunity to overtake the three men, then on the other side of the thicket, suddenly appear in front of him. That is exactly what they did.
Hold it!
The three riders were stopped by the challenge.
Who the hell are you?
Who the hell are you?
We're riders for the Santa Gertrudis Ranch.
Santa Gertrudis Ranch? Nope. I never heard of it.
Oh, that's funny.
What's funny about it?
Well, you're on the Santa Gertrudis Ranch right now. And them are Santa Gertrudis cows.
There's no brand on these cows.
That don't matter none. You can't... Wait, what'd you say your name was?
My name is Jones. Waco Jones.
Jones. Well, Jones... You can't come onto another man's ranch and start rounding up his cattle just because they ain't been branded yet. That ain't no better than stealing.
Well, I reckon you called it, because stealing is what we're doing, all right.
Carter was surprised by Waco Jones's response. He'd as much as admitted they were rustling cattle.
My God, mister. You admit that you're stealing cattle?
Yep. What are you gonna do about it?
Well, I don't intend to let you get away with it.
Carter. No, don't draw! Crap!
Abbott went for his own gun to support Carter. Waco's draw was unbelievably fast. Waco turned his gun towards Spitz and Barrett.
No, we ain't drawing on you!
Waco held his gun pointed toward him for a long moment, smiling at his enjoyment of their fear. Then he put his pistol back in his holster.
What is my name?
What?
What is my name?
I don't know your name, and he don't either, so there ain't no way the law's gonna find out who done this.
What is my name?
I'll be damned. You want us to tell. That's it, isn't it? You want us to tell.
The name is Waco Jones. Do you have that? Waco Jones.
Yeah, I've got it.
Now, if you boys will excuse us, we'll just take these unbranded cows on.
Did you say Waco Jones?
That's what he said his name was, and he was real anxious that we remember it, too.
Yes. He's just the kind that would want you to remember it.
You should have killed the son of a bitch when you had the chance.
Smoke looked at Pearlie, but he didn't say a thing, because he knew that Pearlie was right. On the day after Smoke arrived, Captain King called a meeting of all his hands, leaving a bare minimum to keep watch over his herds. They gathered in front of the big house, Americans and Mexicans alike, wondering what this was all about. Because of the size of the ranch and the vastness of the operation, many of the men had not seen each other in quite a while. They shook hands and used the opportunity to visit and catch up on the latest news. But when Captain King came out on the porch, the men grew silent, out of respect, but also out of curiosity.
Men, I know that you know about the troubles we've been having lately. So far, we've had 14 of our men murdered, and we've had some cattle stolen, but I don't care about that. What I do care about is the men we've lost, and I intend to put a stop to that. Don't you boys look at me like that. I was out there when them fellas hit us the first time. It was like an army riding through. Hell, they was an army. We're going to be an army too, and we have just the man to lead us. Men, I want you to meet Smoke Jensen.
Smoke had been waiting just inside the house, and he came out onto the front porch when King said his name.
Gentlemen, am I correct in assuming that you're ready to fight back next time something happens?
Yes!
Is there anyone who doesn't have a gun?
Three of the Mexican riders raised their hands, and Smoke glanced towards King.
I'll supply you with guns, and I'll supply ammunition for everyone.
All right, men, let's get started.
For the next few days, only a minimum workforce was kept in the field to tend the cattle. Everyone else stayed back at the ranch headquarters, where they were trained by Smoke, Pearlie, and Cal. When someone commented that Cal seemed a little young to be training grown men, Smoke asked Cal to give him a demonstration. Cal put a skillet on the ground, then held his hand out in front of him, palm down. On the back of his hand was a heavy metal washer. Smoke put a bottle on a fence post, then nodded at Cal. Cal turned his hand over and the washer slid off, falling toward the skillet. Cal pulled his pistol and shot, breaking the bottle before the washer hit the skillet.
Well, that's good, but that don't mean you can teach us to be that good.
Sally had been watching the demonstration.
Sally, you want to show them what I taught you?
I don't have time for this. I've got some bear claws in the oven.
Oh, you have time for this.
All right, let me get my pistol.
You can use mine, Miss Sally. I wouldn't want nothing to happen to them bear claws.
Sally glared at Pearlie.
I mean, I wouldn't want anything to happen to those bear claws.
That's more like it.
Sally took Pearlie's gun.
Is she going to do a fast draw, too?
I don't do fast draw.
Being able to draw fast is good for show. But the kind of fighting you'll be doing will have nothing to do at all with drawing fast, and everything to do with hitting what you're shooting at.
Smoke picked up three bottles and held them in his hand. Then he looked over at Sally. She nodded and brought the pistol up to ready.
When you come up against more than one target, the trick is not to get confused, but to choose a target that you know you can hit.
Smoke tossed all three bottles into the air at the same time. After each shot, a bottle burst.
I thought you said select the target you thought you could hit.
I did.
Sally handed the gun back to Pearlie.
Now, are you men ready to learn?
Smoke designed a training course consisting of target practice for both pistol and rifle. For the next few days, the area around Casa Grande reverberated with the steady firing of weapons, as well as galloping hoofbeats as the men rode at full speed through difficult obstacle courses. After a week of training, Smoke had a pretty good idea what he was working with. He began to divide the men into smaller groups, sometimes reassigning a man from one group to another. When King asked why he was doing that, Smoke explained that he was trying to get each group balanced as to capabilities.
I don't want all the best shots together, and I don't want all the best horsemen together. I also want someone with leadership who can take charge of each group so that if they encounter the raiders, he can determine the best course of action.
Yes, I can see that. That's a good idea.
In a couple of more days, I believe we'll have as an effective army as Brandt.
I agree. You've done splendid work. Oh, and speaking of armies, it's time I showed you something.
Oh, what?
They're down there, behind a false wall at the back of the machine shed.
Now you do have to be curious.
Smoke walked with King to the rip-sawed, unpainted, and sun-grayed wood-sided building. Once inside, King got a crowbar and began prying out a nail.
Keep in mind, during the war, I often supplied the Confederate Army with arms and munitions.
Yes, I remember you telling me. You want me to help you with that?
No, I'm just gonna pull a couple of nails so we can pull the board out and let you look behind.
He pulled a second nail. Then, when both nails were removed, he grabbed the board and pulled it out at the bottom, just opening up enough space for Smoke to look through. Smoke put his eye to the crack and looked inside.
Holy hot damn!
I thought you might be impressed. You know what they say, artillery lends dignity to what would otherwise be an uncouth brawl.
There, behind the false wall, were two caisson-mounted Napoleon 32-pounder cannons.
I also have powder and ball for them. And that's not all.
You have more of these?
No, not these. Something else. Come.
At the other end of the machine shed were two rather large objects covered with a tarpaulin. King took the tarpaulin off of one of them.
Damn! You have a Gatling gun.
Actually, I have two of them. With ammunition.
Damn! With you supplying them, how did the South lose the war?
I've asked myself that same question a few times.
Let me make the next raid, Major. The last raiding party we sent out came back with its tail tucked between his legs.
Stone and Brandt were sitting at their regular table in the Gato Rojo Saloon.
I don't know.
Brandt picked up the bottle to pour himself another glass of whiskey, but the bottle was empty. Con, ever the efficient businessman, was there instantly to replace the bottle.
Captain King has been training his men.
What do you mean, he's been training his men?
Several of the Mexicans who live in this town have relatives who work at the Santa Gertrudis. Word has gotten back that the gunman he hired, this man Smoke Jensen, has been training them, just like he would an army.
Well, I'll be damned. An army, huh?
Con poured the liquor into Brandt's glass.
Well, that's what the Mexicans are saying. But if you live down here long enough, you know you can never believe anything a Mexican tells you.
So he's got an army. We fought armies before, me and you.
Yes, but I remind you that we had an army behind us, not a bunch of ragtag outlaws who are all out for themselves.
What do you think we should do? Think maybe we should have one big raid? Maybe against the house?
We can't do anything until we have more information. I need to send someone to find out. The only problem is, I'm not sure where to send him.
Benavides.
Why Benavides?
Well, that's the closest town to the ranch, and it's where all the cowboys from Santa Gertrudis go. And because there's a lot more Americans there than here, you could send someone there without raising too much suspicion.
Thanks. That's good to know.
Happy to help, Major.
Con started back toward the bar.
Why?
Con stopped, but he didn't turn around, nor did he answer Stone.
Yeah, that's a good question. Before I act on any information you give me, I would like to know why you are helping.
Con put an obsequious smile on his lips. Then he turned to face the two men who were now the most important people in all of Concepcion.
Why, you ask?
Yeah, why? I mean, let's face it.
We've run roughshod over everyone else in town, over your neighbors. So, why are you happy to help us?
Are you kidding, Major? Look around you. I've never had business this good. And no matter what you're doing to everyone else, you and your men have been straight with me. Seems only fitting that I should be straight with you.
All right, I'll accept that.
Con kept the smile on his face until he turned back around and started toward the bar. At that moment, his face registered complete relief that he had come up with an answer that satisfied Brandt. Con was playing with fire, and he knew it.
So, you want me to go to Benavides and have a look around and see what I can find out?
No, I need you here. I'll think of someone.
We could send Waco.
No, I don't want to send him. He's much too hot-headed to be dependable. We'll send Manning. He's usually pretty level-headed.
All right, sure thing, boss.
Smoke had not left the ranch since he arrived, so when Kleberg invited him to go with him into Benavides, Smoke jumped at the chance.
Did it ever occur to you that I might like to go into town?
Oh, Sally, you don't want to go into Benavides. It's much too rough a place for a lady like you.
Sally started to respond, and Smoke could tell by the expression on her face that she was going to point out to Alice that she wasn't quite the delicate lady she appeared. But a warning glance from Smoke stopped her, though Smoke's glance was ameliorated by a smile. Sally walked out front with Smoke. Kleberg was over in front of the barn, saddling his horse. Stormy was already saddled.
Thanks.
Thanks for what?
You know for what. For not spoiling Alice's illusion about your... what was it you called it back in Colorado? Your female decorum.
Oh, you're awful.
About that time, Kleberg had his horse saddled and he rode over to Smoke.
Are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Benavides was the closest town to the Santa Gertrudis Ranch. And although it, like all the other small towns around the ranch, was predominantly Mexican, Benavides had considerably more Americans than the others. In fact, it was almost half and half. It was this demographic makeup that made Benavides the destination of choice for most of the Americans in the area, whether they worked on the Santa Gertrudis or on one of the other ranches. Even the architecture of the little town reflected its split personality. One side of the street was American, lined with false-fronted buildings thrown together, washed out, and fly-blown. The first structure Smoke and Kleberg rode by was a blacksmith shop. From the blacksmith shop, going down on the same side of the street, was a butcher shop, a general store, a bakery, six small houses, then a leather goods shop next door to an apothecary. A set of outside stairs climbed the left side of the drugstore to a small stoop that stuck out from the second floor. A painted hand on a sign with a finger pointing up read, W.W. West, M.D. After that came a saloon. On the opposite side of the street, the buildings were constructed of adobe with red tile roofs. Here was a cantina, a seamstress, a Roman Catholic church, a restaurant, and a few houses.
You can go on down to the hog lot if you'd like. I have some business to take care of with the blacksmith. I'll join you in a few minutes.
All right.
Kleberg dismounted and was met by a smiling blacksmith who was wiping his hands on his apron as he approached. Smoke rode on down to the far end of the street, stopping in front of the saloon. Tying off Stormy at the hitching rail, he stepped inside the saloon, moving quickly as he always did to one side of the door, then stepping back against the wall. He recognized many of the men because they were the same Santa Gertrudis riders he'd been working with for the last several days.
Smoke, over here. Let us buy you a beer.
After scanning the entire saloon and determining there was nobody there to pose a threat, Smoke smiled at the greeting and went over to join the others.
Barkeep, a beer for our friend.
The bartender stuck a mug under a barrel and pulled the lever. The mug filled with an amber liquid, then formed a 2-inch foam on top. He handed it to Smoke, then took the nickel from Barrett.
Thanks.
At that moment, Manning came into the saloon. Seeing everyone gathered around the talker, he moved unobserved to the far end of the bar. He started to call the bartender down to him when he noticed the tall man drinking the beer.
Damn, that's Smoke Jansen.
Manning moved slightly to put several people between him and the gunfighter. He didn't know if Jensen would remember him from the encounter at the dance. After all, it was Waco who challenged Jensen. Still, he'd rather not take any chances. He listened to one of the men talking to Smoke about his life on the ranch when he made up his mind.
Draw, Jensen!
Jerking his hand back from the bartender, Smoke drew his gun and fired at about the same time the man did at the end of the bar. The bullet that was fired at Smoke was close, very close. It smashed the beer mug Smoke had put down, then it plowed into the top of the bar, sending up a shower of splinters. The bullet from Smoke's gun hit Manning high in the chest, knocking him back against the wall. Manning looked at Smoke with an expression of surprise on his face. Then he slid down to the floor, leaving a track of blood on the wall behind him. He hit the floor, but remained in the sitting position. His arms flopped out to either side, with the pistol still smoking, dangling by the trigger guard from his index finger.
Todd, I can't believe I tried that.
Who are you? Why did you try to shoot me?
I figured you might recognize me. And if you did, it'd be too late.
Recognize you? From where? Have we ever met?
Sort of. It was at the dance in Corpus.
You were the other one. You were the sensible one. Or at least I thought you were. What got into you, man? What on earth made you pull on me like you did?
I seen you distracted. And I figured that'd give me just enough of an edge.
Somebody get a doctor.
I ain't got no need for that. I'm done for. I know it. And you know it.
Who are you?
His name is Manning.
The shooter held up his left hand, showing that it only had three fingers.
But some folks just call me Three Finger.
Why did you try to kill me, Manning?
Cause that little pissant Waco Jones is always bragging as to how he's gonna kill you. I figured if I did it first, you'd shut him up. So I took a gamble.
It wasn't a very good gamble.
No. No, I don't reckon it was. Do me a favor, will you? If you see Waco, tell him I'll be waiting for him in hell.
Manning had not gone to Benavides alone. Leon Pettis made the ride with him. And he was as shocked as anyone else when Manning suddenly drew his gun against Smoke Jensen. Pettis stayed away from Manning as he was dying, afraid that Manning might see him and say something to him that would let everyone else know that they were together. And he instinctively knew that this was not the place to be seen with Manning. Pettis waited until most of the crowd had gathered around Manning's body. Then he left the saloon, mounted his horse, and left town, covering the 14 miles to Concepcion in just over an hour. It was late in the afternoon when he got there. Waco was sitting in front of the Gato Rojo playing a solitary game of mumbledy peg on the wooden porch. He looked up when Pettis dismounted. The horse was lathered in the white foam of sweat.
Son of a bitch, Pettis. Look at your horse. What'd you ride him so hard for?
I need to talk to the major. Is he inside?
Waco glanced toward the batwing doors and nodded.
Yep, same as always. Him and Sarge back there sitting at their table.
Pettis tied off his horse.
Hey, didn't Manning go with you?
Yeah.
What'd you do? Have a race back with that old three-finger fool? How far back is he?
He's dead.
What?
Waco picked up his knife and got to his feet as he followed Pettis inside.
What do you mean he's dead?
His voice was loud enough to get the attention of everyone in the saloon, including Brandt, who looked up from the card game he was playing.
Who is dead?
Manning is dead. Fool tried to draw against Smoke Jensen.
No, I don't believe that. He told me once that he considered drawing against another man to be playing games. And he said he would never play games.
Yeah, well, you're partly to blame for it.
Me? How the hell do you come up with the idea that I'm partly to blame?
Tell us what happened.
Pettis told how the two of them had split up once they got to the saloon.
We figured we could learn more that way by each of us listening in to different conversations. So Manning was standing down to the end of the bar, and I was way on the other side of the room when I heard Manning shout out for Smoke Jensen to draw. I ain't never seen nothing as fast in my life. I mean, one moment he was standing there holding the barkeep's hand, and the next moment, the next breath even, his gun was in his hand and blazing away. It was like the gun was there all along.
What do you mean he was holding the barkeep's hand?
Barkeep was shaking hands with Smoke Jensen, and that's when Manning took his chance and drawed down on him.
I still don't know what the hell would make him do something like that.
Because he figured that what with Jensen's hand being busy and all, it would give him an edge. Leastwise, that's what he said just before he died. And what he also said was that he'd done it because you're always bragging as to how you're going to kill Jensen. He said he figured that if he beat you to it, it would shut you up.
Damn, he should have known better than to try to beat Jensen, even if Jensen was holding somebody's hand. Can't nobody beat Smoke Jensen, and anyone who tries is just committing suicide.
He can be beat. All it takes is the right man, and he can be beat.
Yes, well, enough about the big, bad gunfighter and how fast he is. What I want to know is, did you find out anything while you were in Benavides? Well, was your ride over there and back a total waste of time?
Yeah, I found out something. More than once, I heard one of them say they wish we would just come on after them so we could have us an all-out battle, like in a real war.
Well, then, what do you say? Let's go get them sons of bitches. Only when we do, Smoke Jensen's mine.
Waco pointed his finger at everyone in the saloon.
Do all of you understand that? Smoke Jensen is mine.
You think you can take him, do you, Waco?
I know I can take him. All it takes is skill, which I got, and guts enough not to be afraid of him.
Waco, you are as big a fool as Manning was. And if you don't watch yourself, you're going to wind up just like him, which is deader than crap.
Waco was angry at being the butt of the joke, but he was gratified to see that when he showed his anger by glaring at him, they were unable to meet his gaze.
But Waco is partly right, ain't he, Major? We're going to do something, ain't we? I mean, I don't want to go challenge Jensen to a duel or anything like that, but it seems to me like we ought to do something to kind of take the wind out of their sails before they get too big for their britches.
Brant looked back at Pettis.
You were over there. You heard them talking. Do they have an army, like Khan said?
Yes, sir, they got them an army, all right. And they're all organized and everything. From what I was able to figure out by listening to them talk, they got themselves broke down into several different groups with leaders and sharpshooters and riders and the like in each of the groups. It's like they got one big army with a lot of really little armies.
It's called a table of organization.
So then you figure they really did know what they was talking about?
Brant nodded and drummed his fingers on the table for a moment or two.
Damn, imagine that. I mean, old Captain King having his own private army.
You got any thought, Major?
Yes, I've got a thought. The way I see it, if they've got an army, that means they have declared war against us. And if they want a war, then by damn a war is what we'll give them.
Just what kind of war are you talking about?
The kind of war they call hell.
All right, let's take it to them. I'm getting tired of waiting around.
Sergeant, do you remember our operation against Buffington, Missouri, back during the war?
Oh, yes, sir. I remember it very well.
Would you say it was effective?
Oh, yes, sir. It was damn effective.
I've always been a strong believer in the idea that if something worked once, it'll work again. Gather up everything we will need.
Yes, sir.
3 days later, Brant stood in front of the sheriff's office. Nearly 60 men were gathered in the street. Though they were normally raucous and out of control, they now stood quietly, awaiting his orders. That Brant could form such miscreants into an efficient military organization spoke highly of his military skill. During his court-martial, Brant's defense attorney tried to point out to the judge and jurors that by incarcerating him, the Army would be losing a tactical genius. Later, when Brant was found guilty and the sentence was passed, the judge made reference to the defense attorney's suggestion that Brant had a brilliant military mind.
That Major Brant has a superb military mind is not, nor has it ever been, in dispute. The court recognizes and acknowledges his brilliance. However, rather than being an ameliorating fact, I find it disturbingly more condemning. A malevolent man of ordinary intelligence can do much evil. but the harm done by a man who is both brilliant and evil is incalculable. Major Brandt, you, I believe, are just such a person. And were I to assess anything less than the maximum penalty allowed me under military law, I would be guilty of malfeasance. Therefore, I sentence you to death by hanging, subject only to appeal to the commanding general of the army.
When Brandt's case went before General Sherman for his review, the general, perhaps remembering his own march through Georgia, commuted the death penalty, sentencing Brandt to 15 years in prison. Because Brandt's death sentence had been commuted, the prosecution didn't even try for a death sentence for Sergeant Wiley Stone. They sentenced him instead to the same 15 years confinement that faced Brandt.
We will ride to our objective in military formation, and we will carry out our mission with discipline and efficiency. Now, boots in saddles. We ride out in 5 minutes.
It was already dark when Brandt's army rode out of Concepcion. The sound of more than 60 horses echoed by from the buildings and houses on either side of the street. By now, nearly all of the citizens had left town, even the business owners, leaving behind what goods they couldn't take with them. The few who remained stood in their dark houses now and peered around the curtains and shades as the men rode out. At first, there was some excitement in the town as they thought Brandt and his men were leaving for good. There were a few, though, who knew exactly what Brandt's plans were, and they shared that knowledge with the others, so that those who watched the raiders leave did so with a feeling of frustration, depression, and helplessness. Brandt was riding at the head of the column.
Company, halt!
It was just after midnight, and they'd been riding for some 3 hours. The hill where Brandt halted them was about 200 feet high, and from there they had an excellent view of the layout of the Santa Gertrudis Ranch. To the right, as they looked down from the hill, was Casa Grande. Every window in the big house was dark, indicating that they were all in bed. The two-story edifice loomed large and gleaming in the light of the full moon. To the left of the big house was the kitchen that served the cowboys, and across from the kitchen was the bunkhouse. Then came the barn, a lot, and several other outbuildings. Finally, to the left, a full quarter of a mile away from the big house, were more than a score of small houses. Some of the houses had swings hanging from trees. Others had small carts, indicating that children lived there.
What is that town?
It isn't a real town. It's what's left of a Mex village that King moved up here so he would have workers on his ranch. They call it King's Settlement.
Damn, it's as big as most of the towns around here.
Who'd want to live there? They don't even have saloons.
Muffle all horses and equipment.
The order was passed down the line until it could no longer be heard by those on the front rank. Once the mounts were muffled, the group proceeded at a walk.
Spread out into a company front.
The riders at the rear of the column came up to either side until Brandt presented one long rank of men and horses side by side as they faced the ranch.
Pass it down, right and left. Everyone but the torchman, draw weapons.
The weapons were drawn.
Torchmen, light your torches.
Every third man in the formation lit a torch, so that soon there were 20 blazing torches. Torches gave out a wavering orange light that brightened the night considerably. Brandt held his sword above his head. Then he looked up and down the line.
Charge!
As one, the men and horses moved down the hill like an invading wave of fire. All attempts at silence having ended now, the horses at full gallop threw their cloth mufflings off so that the hooves thundered across the plain.
Fire!
40 men began firing their pistols into the houses of the little village. They swept through the houses, still unopposed. And as they passed by the buildings, the torchmen threw their torches. Almost immediately, several of the Mexican homes caught fire. Sally was the one who heard it first.
Smoke! Smoke!
She hadn't actually needed to call him the second time. He woke when she first said his name, and even as he was waking, he heard the sound of gunfire. Smoke got out of bed and looked through the window of the guest bedroom. At first, it was too dark to see anything, even by the light of the silver moon. Then, he saw the several gleaming objects arcing through the sky. A moment later, a couple of the buildings caught fire, and in the orange glow, he could see dozens of riders moving back and forth, firing into the houses of King's settlement.
It's Brent! It has to be!
Smoke pulled on his trousers.
Smoke! Smoke, wake up!
The man outside his door was Richard King. Smoke nodded at Sally, who by now had put on a robe. Sally opened the door and King was standing just outside, holding a burning candle.
I'll be right with you.
Within a matter of seconds, Smoke was running down the stairs with King just behind him. Kleberg, whose room was on the first floor, met him at the bottom of the stairs.
Should we turn out the men?
Yes. Tell them to get their horses saddled. I'm going to get a rifle and get up on the loft of the barn. See if I can get a shot.
Your rifle won't be any good at that range.
Maybe not, but I'm going to try.
Wait.
King headed toward a walnut cabinet.
Take this.
King handed Smoke a heavy rifle with a polished walnut stock and grip.
Ooh, nice weapon.
It's a Sharps 50. It's accurate from a mile away.
Ammunition?
Here's a whole box of shells.
King handed over a box of the large, heavy shells. With rifle in hand, Smoke left the house, then started to spring toward the barn. Cal and Pearlie had been sleeping in the bunkhouse, and they met Smoke about halfway between the house and the barn.
Get everyone up, dressed, armed, and saddled.
Right.
Smoke climbed the ladder to the barn loft, then lay down and looked through the window. By now, several houses were burning. Smoke opened the breech of the big rifle, slid a shell in and closed the breech, then sighted down the barrel. In the light of one of the burning houses, he saw a man on a horse. That man was aiming a pistol. Smoke couldn't see the man's target, but he didn't care. An instant later, he saw the pistol shooter being knocked off his horse. Smoke ejected the smoke and empty cartridge and put another bullet in. A moment later, he found a second target. Like the first man, this one threw up his arms and tumbled from his saddle. When Brent saw the first of his men fall off his horse, he thought someone might have shot him from one of the little houses. But he heard the bullet that hit the second man, and he knew it came from a long way off. Looking back toward the shadows of the main house, he saw a wink of flame from the muzzle blast. And an instant later, a third of his men fell.
Sergeant! Order the withdrawal!
Pull back! Pull back!
What the hell are we pulling back for? We ain't even had a chance any of them women yet!
Realizing then that they were being picked off one at a time by someone so far away they couldn't even see them, men were on the verge of panic.
Let's get the hell out of here!
Pettis' fear spread through the others, so that like a flock of birds suddenly taking flight, everyone turned and galloped away, leaving half a dozen houses burned behind them. By now, Pearlie, Cal, and all the cowboys were dressed and had come to the stable to saddle their horses. In the barn, Smoke stood up and walked to the edge of the loft where he could look down at the men from the open window.
Pearlie! Take 10 men with you and follow them.
Follow them? I want to do more than follow them. I want to catch them bastards.
It's too late to catch them now. They have too much of a head start, and you'll never find them in the dark. All I want you to do is make sure they don't decide to come back.
All right, Smoke, if you say so.
Smoke jumped down from the loft and threw a saddle on Stormy.
Where are you going, Smoke?
To see what I can do to help down in the quarters.
Bucket brigades could do nothing for the houses that were already burning, but by wetting down the adjacent houses, they were able to prevent the fires from spreading any further. They also searched for people who had been wounded by the attack, and they moved them to safety. The fires burned, and the area was bathed in a hellish orange glow that created patches of light and dark. That created the illusion of rescue workers appearing and disappearing as they moved in and out of the light and dark. Smoke and a few other men took a long pole and used it to collapse one burning house in on itself to prevent the fire from spreading any farther. Standing back, Smoke wiped the back of his hand against his face, leaving a black smudge. Looking around, he saw Ramon standing with a Mexican woman. Seeing Smoke looking toward him, Ramon came over to talk to him.
Who is that?
Her name is Rosita.
Was this her house? If so, I'm sorry we had to collapse it like that, but we had no choice.
No, everyone understands that we had to destroy some houses to save the others. Rosita's house wasn't damaged.
Oh, she lost someone, didn't she?
Her baby was killed. When the riders came down and started shooting up the place, a bullet went into her baby's crib.
Oh, damn.
Look out!
Smoke looked around just as another house collapsed in on itself. The flames roared up, then sent a huge shower of sparks climbing into the sky to disappear among the stars.
How many were killed?
11. 4 are women, 3 are children, including Rosita's baby.
Wounded?
7, but fortunately, none of the wounds seemed that severe.
King and Kleberg joined Smoke and Ramon then. Like Smoke, King's face was blackened from the smoke and burnt wood. King shook his head.
This is awful. This is almost as bad as it was when he raided the ranch during the war. The only difference is, I wasn't here then, and I told myself that it could never have happened if I'd been here. Well, I am here now, and it didn't make any difference. It didn't make one damn bit of difference. Brandt came in here and burned the houses and killed women and children, and there wasn't a thing I could do about it.
How many people got put out of their homes?
I'm not sure. Bob, a count.
7 houses were completely destroyed. 4 were so badly damaged that the people can't live in them now, and 3 more were partially damaged.
Ramon, tell your people that we'll rebuild the houses right away, and we'll repair the ones that need it.
My people know that, Captain King. They are sorry that this trouble has fallen on you.
On us, my friend. It has fallen on us.
Where will the people stay until their houses are rebuilt?
Don't worry about that, Senor Smoke. We are all friends and family here. We will make room for those who lost their homes. And if there isn't room for everyone, Padre Bustamante will make room for them in the church.
Burley, they're heading toward the Santa Gertrudis. They probably think there's only one ford, and that's the one some miles west of here. But I know another, a lot closer. If we go this way...
Barrett pointed to the southeast.
I think we can beat them across and be waiting on the other side.
Hey, wait a minute. Are you talking about the Garza Ford?
Yes, Bits.
That's a bar that's no more than 4 feet wide. That's not a place to cross in the dark.
I know it ain't. That's why I know they're going to go all the way to the other ford to get across.
Can you get us across this Garza Ford in the middle of the night?
Yes.
Yeah, there's another thing you might want to think about. I mean, I don't know if you boys seen the raiders as well as I did, but there was at least 40 or 50 in that bunch, maybe more. And if you look around, there's only 10 of us.
You think they would expect us to beat them across the river and be waiting for them?
Yeah, I doubt they'd even know about the Garza Ford. No, I'm sure they won't be expecting us.
Then we'll just hide and wait for them as they cross. We won't attack them head on, but I do intend to get a few licks in. Lead the way, Barrett.
Riding hard, Hurley, Barrett, Spitz, and the others reached the Santa Gertrudis. Then, with Barrett leading the way, they crossed the ford in single file. Once on the other side, they rode quickly down the river until they reached the Duval Ford, which was wide enough to drive entire herds of cattle across.
You and you, stay back here and hold our horses.
Pearly chose 2 men that he knew were not among the best shots.
What the hell? And miss out on the fun?
Don't gripe about it, Billy. They do it this way in the army. When the cavalry fights dismounted, 1 in 4 holds the horses.
Well, yeah, but why me?
Because you can't hit a bull in the ass from 40 paces.
Come on, let's get in position.
The men ran crouched over along the bank of the stream until they found places that provided both cover and concealment. They waited for almost an hour, so long that they were losing the cover of darkness, but still they'd seen no one. The sun was not yet up, but it had grown much lighter in the east, and distant objects began to come into view. Pearly was beginning to wonder if Brant's men had managed to cross the stream ahead of them, and he was about to call the whole thing off when they heard the sound of hoofbeats.
Get ready. Fire when I fire.
It was light enough for Pearly to see what they were up against, and he gasped at the size of the army. There were at least 60, maybe more, and they hit that stream at a gallop, churning up the water so that a fountain of bubbles was sustained as they came across. First, Curly was gonna fire when they were in the river, but at the last moment he held back. Reason that if he took them head on, they would have no choice but to come after their attackers. So Curly waited until they were across and started down the road before he opened fire. Immediately after he fired the first shot, the others in his group started shooting too. He had the satisfaction of seeing three men fall from their saddles and a fourth grab his arm. Riding at the head of the column, Brandt didn't even realize immediately that they were under fire. When he did discover it, he had no idea how many there were, so he reacted as any military leader would when caught in an ambush. He moved his men quickly through the killing ground.
Forward at a gallop!
The raiders broke into a gallop, riding away quickly, paying absolutely no heed whatever to the men they were leaving behind. After Brandt was gone, Curly and the others moved out to examine the men who were lying on the ground.
Ooh, I need one of them alive. I want to question him.
Curly, this one's still alive?
Curly hurried over to him and looked down at the wounded man.
What's your name?
Why should I give you my name?
Because we're about to bury you. Don't you want your friends and family to know where you are?
I ain't got no friends or family. And if nobody knows where I am, maybe the devil won't be able to find me.
What now?
We'll bury him, and we'll get back to the ranch and see what we can do to help out.
As the sun rose on King's settlement, a pall of smoke lay over the burned-out shells of what had once been houses. Those who were burned out, as well as the luckier residents of the little settlement whose houses had not been destroyed, were picking through the twisted and blackened rubble to see what they could salvage. The morning air was permeated with the aroma of coffee, bacon, biscuits, and eggs, because the ranch cook had brought up the chuck wagon and prepared breakfast for everyone. Sally contributed freshly made donuts she had made back at the main house, and here and there could be seen a cowboy or an entire family eating their breakfast from tin plates. Curly and the others returned from their sortie just as breakfast was being served. Curly didn't go to the chuck wagon, but he did grab a couple of donuts and a cup of coffee. There was a line waiting for breakfast, and despite his known chowhound tendencies, Curly was hanging back until all the men who had ridden out with him were fed.
What did you see?
A lot of men. A hell of a lot of men. 50, 60, maybe more.
So you did catch up with them?
Yep, thanks to Barrett. Barrett knew another ford across the Santa Gertrudis. We took that, got across before they did, then waited for them, and hit them when they came across.
What? You attacked 60 men with 10? Curly, that's a dumb thing to do. It's a wonder you're still alive.
I didn't attack them head on. I waited until they passed before I attacked. That way, they had no idea how many of us there were, so they skedaddled. You should have seen them run.
I'm sorry about the sharpness of tone, but I was worried about you. I should have known better. You did it just right. And I'm proud of you.
Thanks. I just asked myself, what would Smoke do? And I did it.
So? Did you get any of them?
Yeah, we killed three and wounded at least one.
Good. By damn, we made the sons of bitches pay for what they did here.
Not enough. Even counting the four that were killed here, that still leaves us with four more dead than they had. And six more wounded.
Curly was about to take another bite of his second donut when he heard that, and he paused.
You mean we had 11 killed?
Yes.
Damn.
And that's not the worst of it. Most of the dead are women and kids, including one baby.
Curly was quiet for a long moment.
You all right?
Yeah. Listen, Smoke. We gotta find that son of a bitch and kill him. I mean, this has nothing to do with you doing a favor for a friend now, or anything like that. This has become personal.
How's it become personal? You don't know any of these people who were killed.
It's personal for me.
Yeah.
Smoke looked out at the faces of the people of King's Settlement as they went about the business of trying to pick up the pieces of their lives.
It's that way for me, too.